Hello, this is Joshua Mack, and a few minutes with a Puritan. We have been working our way through Jeremiah Burroughs' book, A Treatise on Earthly Mightiness, and I can't believe it, but we're almost at the end, which is exciting and a little bit sad as well, just because this is so, so good and so, so important. He is calling on us to fight against earthly mindedness. And he wants to challenge us to take radical measures to avoid and really run away from this kind of mindset that is so, so common. I was thinking it's a little like one of my daughters. One of my daughters, she can't eat certain foods. And when I say she can't eat certain foods, if she eats them, the consequences are almost immediate, really, really painful for her. Now, those foods are the kinds of foods that I would think are pretty tasty, but for her, they're definitely not tasty. They do all kinds of damage, and so she can't eat them at all. She has to completely avoid them. And that's kind of how it is with us and earthly mindedness, actually. Before we were saved, there was a way of thinking that seemed normal to us. The reality is that it was doing us great damage. Like my daughter, before she found out which foods were hurting her, she would eat and experience the consequences and not know that it was foods that she enjoyed that was actually doing that kind of damage to her. And that's the way we were before we were saved. There was a way of thinking about life in this world that seemed pleasurable to us, seemed normal to us, and yet was absolutely destroying us. And now God's opened our eyes to that, and we've seen, no, earthly mindedness is taking us away from God and doing all kinds of damage to us and to our families. And yet, even though we're saved, sometimes that mindset still appears pleasurable to us. And so Burroughs is going to close this book by challenging us to make no compromises when it comes to being earthly mindedness. Fight earthly mindedness with everything that we've got. And he has to challenge us to fight like this because he knows we like to make excuses. And one of the excuses that he anticipates someone making is, why can't we be earthly minded and heavenly minded at the same time? And he says, the reason you can't be earthly minded and heavenly minded at the same time is because when I talk about earthly mindedness, really what I'm talking about is making this world your God. And you can't serve this world as your God and God at the same time. You cannot serve two masters. It's very plain that the text of Scripture in Colossians 3:2 marks the opposition. Set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth. There are two places you can set your affections: things above, things on the earth. And they're opposed to one another. Set your affections or minds, for I think that it's the same word as that in my text, who mind earthly things. We may have forgotten by now, but he has been expositing Philippians chapter 3. And this passage that talks about minding earthly things. And he says that's the same phrase in Colossians when it says, set your minds on things above, not on things below. A man cannot look up to heaven and down to earth both at the same time. There's an opposition between these two, between the earthly mindedness that's been opened to you and minding of heavenly things. And when he talks about earthly mindedness here, the kind that is absolutely opposed to being heavenly minded, what is he talking about? He's talking about making the things of earth the thing. He's talking about our best thoughts going to now and getting stuff for ourselves. He's talking about cleaving to the things of this earth as if this world is the source of our happiness, or being willing to sin to get the things of this earth. He's talking about worry, being filled with distracting cares, making your main priority the thing that causes you to make big choices, your finances or your earthly position. He means that making the great purpose of your life having more things, or what home you live in, or what vacation you're able to go on. He's talking about just kind of existing in this world like everyone else and not living for something greater. He's talking about doing everything you do for now, being so short-sighted that you're only living for the next 60, 70 years and not the next 7 billion years. He's talking about being the kind of person who is willing to make sacrifices, great sacrifices, for a little advancement in things of this world, a little security, a little safety, a little comfort, and not be willing to make those kinds of sacrifices for your relationship with Jesus. That kind of earthly-mindedness, that's what we're talking about, and that kind of earthly-mindedness is opposed to heavenly-mindedness, and we have to fight against that mindset at all costs. But you'll say, he's going to anticipate another excuse now, but somebody will say, you are naive. You're expecting too much of us. We need things while we're on this earth. And if we need things, what else are we going to do but focus on them? You can imagine somebody saying that, right? He puts this in kind of old Puritan language, but I can imagine talking to, say, a teenager who's like, oh man, you're saying I need to be all out for Jesus, but oh man, I'm not going to be able to get to be a lawyer or whatever position in the world that I want if I'm not earthly minded. And when I get to heaven, then I'll be in heaven and it'll be easy for me to be heavenly minded, but I can't be like that now. It doesn't make sense for me to be like that now because I'm here on earth. To that I answer, so this is going to be Barrow's answer, though Christians live upon the earth, yeah, that's true. We're here right now. We're not of the earth. There's a great deal of difference between one that's of the earth and another that lives on the earth. Christ said concerning himself that he was not of the earth. It's true, he did live a while on the earth, but he was not of it. In John 3:31, he that comes from above is above all. He that is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth. While Christ spoke these words, he was on the earth, but he was not of the earth. And so it is with Christians. They are upon the earth, but they're not of the earth. They are a people redeemed from the earth. It's true, these are things we need. Therefore, we must not mind them. For in Matthew 6, where Christ speaks against taking thought for what we shall eat or drink or put on, he said, your heavenly Father knows you have need of these things. You don't have to live your life worried about these things because your Father knows you need them. You have some need, yes, but you have need of other things and greater need of other things than these things. So because your Father knows you need these things, you don't have to set your focus on them like the world does, because God is going to take care of you in that regard so that you can focus on what is most important. In other words, you don't have to make an idol of these things because God knows you need them. And so he'll give you what you need to do what you need to do so that you can focus on what he wants you to focus on and what is of greater priority for you right now. What need is there for you to live upon the earth, but in order to provide for eternity and of living to the honor of Christ and the praise of his gospel? In other words, why are you not in heaven right now? Well, there must be some way that you can glorify God here and some way that you can send treasures on ahead for when you get to heaven. I say you have no need of anything on the earth but in subordination to higher things. In other words, you do need things here on this earth so that you can live for heaven. There is no need that you should live except for some other end. You're not just here on the planet to eat, drink, buy a house, go on vacations. You're here on the planet to glorify God. And you buy a house, perhaps, maybe, so that you can serve God. So they have a place to sleep. and be energized so that you can go out and serve God, so that you can bring people into your house and show hospitality to them. I mean, that's why you have a house, so that you're freed up to serve Jesus that way. Why do you go on vacations? You go on vacations, one, to glorify God and be thankful for this world that he's made, but also so that you go away for a little while so that you can be re-energized to serve Jesus better when you come back. Therefore, do not let this be an argument to plead for earthliness. Hey, I'm on earth. What am I going to do? And you have to watch out that you don't make excuses, because he says an earthly spirit's very witty in pleading for itself. I shall close this point with some exhortation to you and directions about this point of earthly mindedness. And here's the exhortation. Please take this seriously. And he says, I especially want those of you who are young to listen to me, lest it proves to be with you as it has been proven with many that are digging veins of gold and silver underground. So he's going to use an illustration here. What happens when people are digging for gold sometimes is that the earth falls on them and they're never able to come out of the mine again. And so it is with many that are beginning in the way of religion or beginning their lives for Jesus, that are digging in the mines of salvation for unsearchable riches, for that is abundantly better than gold or silver. Now, while you're thus seeking for grace and godliness, watch out that you're not covered with the earth while you're digging in the world. So you're a young Christian. You would say, you're hyped up. You're like, I want to live for Jesus. I want to live for Jesus. And he's saying, hey, that's so great. But watch out that while you're out in this world doing what you got to do, at digging, that the earth doesn't just cave in on you and you're done. While you're digging in this world, keep wide open some place to heaven. Or otherwise, if you dig too deep, noxious gas vapors will come up from the earth if it doesn't fall on you first. There will be noxious gas vapors to choke you if there's not a wide hole to let in the air that comes from heaven to you. Seriously. There's a mindset out there that is being forced upon you that is so dangerous. And you dig so deep in this world, and it just seems normal, and that's what people tell you you have to do, and yet you're not careful as you're doing it, and the world just closes in on you. Those that are digging in mines are very careful to leave a place open for fresh air to come in. And so, though you may follow your calling and do the work that God sets you here for, as others do, be as diligent in your calling as any, but still keep a passage open to heaven that there may be fresh gales of grace come into your soul. If at any time you're in the world just one day and have not some spiritual air from heaven, watch out. There's a vapor coming up that will choke you. Oh, that Christians would consider this while they're here below. And parents, please help your kids consider this. Help your kids consider this. I know we live in an environment where it's very tempting to put a lot of pressure on our kids to just absolutely excel in school and get top careers or whatever, or get at least some big career, because we're like, well, if they don't do that, then they're not going to be able to buy a house and they're not going to be able to survive and all that stuff. But they will survive. God is more than able to take care of them if they're seeking first the kingdom. Of course, they should pursue being a good student. And of course, we should encourage them. Hey, use your gifts for the glory of God. Study, do everything that you can do. But let's not tell them to dig so deep. Let's watch out for them as they dig so deep. If your kid is digging very, very deeply and there's not a lot of safety measures, then the earth's easily going to fall in on them, and you don't want to be standing there watching as it does, or pleading with them, or telling them, dig harder. No, man, we want to watch out for our children. And if they're living in this world that's promoting a way, an approach to life, and we're not helping them push against that, then we're not helping them, are we? I remember reading Augustine's comments on Psalm 72:19. They that dwell in the wilderness shall bow before him, and his enemies shall lick the dust. In a witty way, he applied it to earthly-minded men by saying, if you lick the dust, by this you will come to be counted as one of the enemies of God. And that passage doesn't actually mean that. But he says that's a good illustration, at least. Be careful that you don't lick the dust and so come to be counted as an enemy of God. You who would be counted as friends and seek a reconciliation with God, do not lick the dust to be always here as moles upon the earth. Moles, though blind, are said to have their eyes open if they're on the top of the ground, and then they shake and tremble. So though the earth may close the eyes of men here for a while, certainly there will be a day when their eyes shall be opened to see how they have guiled and deceived themselves. It's worse, too, in the time of the gospel to be an earthly-minded man than at other times. It was not such an evil thing to be an earthly-minded man in the time of the law when all the promises of God were carried in a kind of earthly way. That's an interesting thing that he's saying here. But he's saying we have a lot of revelation. And we know the dangers of earthly-mindedness in a unique way. And in the time of the law, things seemed... God was stooping down to work with us like children, and a lot of the promises in that era were very earthly kinds of promises. Not all of them, of course, but he did promise them a land. He did promise them material blessings, all those kinds of things, as a way of preparing us for the great promises that are going to come in Christ. But however you understand what he's saying there. Now, we do understand this. In the time of the gospel, we have a clearer view of heaven, of what's to come, of eternity than ever before. And so we, as people who have seen what we've seen, we have an even greater responsibility to live differently as a result. Heavenly things have been revealed. He that is from above has come among us. The heavens are broken open. The glory of it shines upon the churches in a far brighter manner than it did before. Therefore, gospel light aggravates the sin of earthly mindedness. And now above all times should the hearts of men and women be disengaged from the things of this earth. Well, I guess we didn't get to the end. There's five directions at the end of this book how to get free from earthly-mindedness. And it's not a lot left, but it's worth it for us to just stop here and then spend one more podcast on how to free ourselves from earthly-mindedness. But let me ask you just at the end, has your commitment to fight against earthly-mindedness been renewed? God has done a great work in you if you're a Christian. You have hope. You have a living hope. And Satan, for sure, does not want you to believe it. He wants you to put your hope where everybody else puts their hope, even though it's a false hope, and even though putting your hope in things like that does all kinds of spiritual damage. That mindset has to be avoided at all costs because it does all kinds of damage. But it's tempting. And so even as Christians who have been transformed and been given a living hope, we need to pray that God helps us see earthly-mindedness as dangerous and that we would be willing to do the hard work of staying away from the kinds of thoughts and from the kind of approach to life in this world that is going to cause us to start heading in the opposite direction of Jesus.